This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt and Brett here. A little bit later on in the 5 o'clock hour, our Democrat of the day is going to be Senator Nick Frentz, the DFLer from District 19, Mankato, St. Peter, that area down there. He's going to be kind enough to join us. Also, a Jeff Stein sighting coming up here in about 30 minutes or so. Brett, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm tired today. I don't know. I'm tired, man. I think it was the weather change. Now I'm kind of getting antsy. Now I'm like, I look outside and I see the snow. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're here for another month, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Not pleasant. But I do have something that is pleasant. Oh, yeah, that's right. Once again, we have caught a catchphrase word and decided to try to use it for our own good. As AM 950 Wordle is kicking off here, here's the deal. It has absolutely nothing to do with the actual Wordle. This is just basically, like I said, we're just latching onto a name and just trying to use it. So here's the deal. Over the next 2 hours, you will have plenty of opportunities to submit a word that's going to feature three letters in order. I'll give you those three letters here in a second. You can submit this word by calling us, calling Brett and talking with him, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Or you can, on the live feeds of the radio show, that's right, it's Radio for Your Eyes, you can basically watch the show at Facebook. Go to AM950's Facebook page or Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show, on Facebook. You can watch the show there. You can make a submission there. All the submissions that we get will be put into a big pile, and then basically we randomly pick one, and that is the winner for the day. If you win, you get yourself an AM950 Ooh-Ah calendar for 2022. Still good for 10 and a half months as of right now. So there you go. That's a quality sell right there. 10 and a half months of pure glory. And my photos and a lot of good dates on there, too. Let's take a look. Look at that one. July. Just love July. That's the Veterans Memorial down over in Richfield. Just fantastic. Anyway, there you go. You got that up. You can get one of these calendars. Now, if you don't want to do Wordle and you do want to get the calendars, simply head over to AM 950 Radio, click on the membership page, make a one-time or recurring donation. You can find out all the details there. And as a thank you, we will send you one of the AM 950 calendars. So, Brett, are we ready for today's three-letter combination?
What do you got today?
I have got the letters S as in Sam, Q as in quiet, and R as in Romeo. S, Q, R. Now, your word can be as long or as short as you like, as long as it's a real word. And it just has to have those letters in order in the word. Okay? I can think of about, I've came up with four.
Keep in mind, no places as well, right?
Well, you
know.
Are we
going to let those slide?
Well, I mean, I'm. I don't know which Uzbekistani town this is. I mean, they all sound the same after you've been to them once or twice. Am I right or am I right? But they, who doesn't love fermented horse milk? It's delicious. Anyway, I'll tell you this. If you've got a legitimate word, I'll check it. If it's legit.
Oh, okay.
Because we did have Gazelka yesterday get put in with that one.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I didn't realize that until later. But no, so the letters today, S, Q, R, all right? I can think of, like I said, four words off the top of my head that right away, easy, fall into that category. If you like, you basically give Brett a call, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. You can also, once again, go to the Facebook live streams on AM 950 Radio, Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show, and get your entry in there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So let me bring up the subject we said yesterday towards the end of the show, which ended up spurring a heck of a lot of conversation between me and some of the listeners last night, some of the social media followers last night. And that was the story of Mike Max, the radio host across town, basically describing Minneapolis as a hellhole and telling people that there is no reason to go into downtown. Now, once again, this is a gutsy call for a guy that works at a radio station who carries the Minnesota Timberwolves to have the flagship station of your radio network tell people not to come into the downtown and catch your games. I mean, that's gutsy, but and stupid, and wildly stupid. I mean, insanely stupid, but still gutsy. I mean, wow. But he went on this thing, Minneapolis is a hellhole, it's so unpleasant, there's nothing good here, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, it's not too often you get to see someone bash on their home city, especially at a radio station which is known as it for its loving cuddle fest with the Twin Cities. I kind of surprised that he would do this for this reason. Well, I mean, we kind of ran through the things yesterday. I mean, is this a bad February sweeps month stunt that someone really didn't think through? You know, is that the case? Is it a case where he's just a far right Republican and he's, you know, he's so upset because people went out to the low pit and people are going into the downtown and people are talking nice about the city? It's like, no, it's a hellhole. Get away. Don't ever come into the downtown. It's not fair. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Is he just some far right wing stooge who basically wants to push his agenda on everyone else? Or does he really think that, you know, I am the God and he basically can come out there and say, you need to fix this. And everyone's going to be like, oh, my God, Mike Max. Mike Max wants us to fix these things. Oh, my God. I don't know. It's stupid regardless. I'll get to that here in a second. I'll get to that here in a second. But the conversations that was interesting I had last night with a lot of people chimed in last night. I had a lot of good conversation about this. There were some things I wanted to clarify. There's one thing that people were thinking I said, which I did not say. There are people that just don't want to acknowledge history. And there are people that are trying to do a false equivocation to basically somehow imply that Mike Max is correct. And you know, I'm going to get to that as well. And then also there's something that's just an obvious statement. I'll get to that at the end here. But the first thing I want to do, and I want to make sure I clarify this, because I never once said this. Yes, of course there's crime in Minneapolis right now. That was never my point. That you know, it's the implication that Mike Max was putting out there was that this is bad now, and the implication that he put out there was it was like, you know, strolling on the Easter parade not that long ago. No, Minneapolis has got crime, and yeah, I'd probably say it's a little worse than usual at this point. It's not the worst I've seen. No, it's not the worst I've seen. It's a city. Cities have crime. That's how they work. And that's kind of, once you get a lot of people in a close confines, stuff like bad stuff happens. And that's just the case. And I'm not saying you just shrug your shoulders and ignore it, but I never once implied there isn't crime here. I don't mind the fact, I understand my city has got some flaws. No place is perfect. I mean, and if I can be so bold, I mean, we had stories that there was a murder out of Sandstone, a murder out of Hermantown. I got another story today about a man who's abused a child in Mille Lacs. There's horrible crime. There is an epidemic of freaking meth in this state. Trust me, in rural Minnesota, in every little small town and nook and cranny, there's a meth lab out there making meth, and they're selling it, and there are people addicted to meth out in rural Minnesota. There is a meth epidemic in rural Minnesota and rural America, for that matter. Don't want to talk about that. The chronic drinking and driving, a lot of it in outstate Minnesota. We had remember the guy in Bixby, the guy that ripped off everyone at the farmer's co-op and bankrupted the entire town. That seems like a pretty bad crime. Crime is everywhere. My parents, when I was a kid, went hiking in the Green Mountains of Vermont. Someone busted into their car. It's everywhere. It's an unfortunate aspect of our reality. There are the people that want that are looking for, you know, a quick fix on whatever that is. They want the money. They want to buy drugs. They want to get food. Whatever the case may be, and they're gonna rob you. That just happens. Crime happens everywhere, and it's only belligerent idiots who are trying to drive a narrative that kind of, whatever happened to Mayberry? Whatever happened to the Andy Griffith America? That didn't exist. That was a TV show, you freaking idiots. You see the words at the beginning and end of that thing every 30 minutes? That was a TV show. You know what you don't see in Andy Griffith? Black people. That's what you don't see. You don't see a lot of that. You don't talk about, you don't have the Klan rally showing up on the Andy Griffith Show. I mean, you do have chronic alcoholism in Andy. What was the name of the drunk on the Andy Griffith Show? I can't even remember. Oh, God. They weren't helping that guy. Let's just be honest about it. I mean, that guy needed some, 12-step program, something of that nature. They just weren't giving it to him. They're just letting him roam out of his cell, go get drunk, and then roam back into the cell. I mean, that's just bad policing right there. No, you create a false narrative that nothing ever bad happens there or happened at that time, and everything bad is happening right now. Hence, I'm going to attack it for a political reason, whatever that political reason is. No, there's crime in Minneapolis. I never said there wasn't. Still love this town. Still love this town with the fire of a million suns. Minneapolis, St. Paul kicks ass. It kicks ass. Don't listen to Mike Max. The second thing I want to say is that there were a lot of people that came after me who tried to imply, no, things used to be rosy and clean in Minneapolis. Used to be a bouquet of flowers, man. And now it's all of a sudden bad. Okay. I love history. Okay. I have studied history. Brett, you know I do like history, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I can tell authoritatively, Minneapolis has always had its issues. As a matter of fact, undeniably for some people, Minneapolis right now is better than it's ever been. I am not joking. Undeniably, that is the case. As much as you say, no one's happy, everyone's happy. No, there are large swaths of the population where the city of Minneapolis is better than it's ever been. What time are you talking about when things were so much better than they are today? Back in the Doc Ames days when he was the mayor, the most corrupt mayor probably in the northern tier, for goodness sakes? Doc Ames was corrupt as the day is long. Was it back in the 1920s when St. Paul let all their gangsters come over and rob Minneapolis constantly? Was it the 1930s when there was drunks everywhere? Go take a look at the pictures of Nicollet Park, right in front of the old Nicollet Hotel. Holy God, just a bunch of people passed out drunk with bottles everywhere. It's unbelievable. How about in the 1950s when they did the Skid Row project? There were so many flop houses and dive bars in Minneapolis, they literally tore out block after block after block under the argument, well, since we're going to tear up the city anyway for the interstate system, let's take care of all this blight. And they did a poor job of fixing that. The 1970s, all Minneapolis was in the 70s was porn shops and a Shinders. Well, and there was the McDonald's and the Skyway. And those were it. That's what you had in downtown Minneapolis.
Oh, man, I kind of miss Shinders.
I do, man. That was
an experience to go to any Shinders.
That was a gritty town back then. That was a gritty town back then, man. 70s into the 80s. The reason why you expanded the Skyway system was to prevent white suburbanites from ever having to go down to street level in the city, for God's sakes. Truth. I mean, I worked at Metro Traffic in 2000 when the Metro Traffic was down on Hennepin and 6. Remember that poor story, that college kid that got murdered and they found him down in the river? I think it was Halloween, October of 2002. Likely that guy was killed in the parking garage of that building I was in. We had the police come up and say, no one can walk down in the parking garage by themselves. Everyone should go with someone else. I personally saw three cars jacked out of that parking lot during T-Wolves games. The thieves would just wait for the cars to pull in, run in there when no one was looking, jump in the car, and off they'd go. Crime has always been here, man. You have convinced yourself, you have created a false reality which didn't exist, that would never have existed, and are using that false reality to condemn the modern-day Minneapolis because it's convenient to validate your narrative. Shut up. If you don't know the history, stop acting like you do. I mean, seriously, just don't be so damn ignorant. Tell you what, I'm going to take a break. When I come on back, I want to get to the misnomer, misconception that's being stated, that was stated a bunch of times last night, that I want to address as well. And one final note to Mike Max and anyone else that really hates Minneapolis. I'll get to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, yeah. 1970s Minneapolis. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Otis was the drunk from Mandy. Thank you very much to the.
Oh, there you go. We got some help on the Facebook feed.
Yeah, the Facebook feed on that one. So, all right. So, once again, I never said there was any crime in Minneapolis. Two, all these people are trying to say, well, Minneapolis used to be so much better. It's like, when was that? Seriously, God, it's always kind of been a mess. And really, it has. Because this is the reality, is that you know, cities are far more Gangs of New York than they are Easter Parade, okay? Let's just be honest about it. That's a brutal way to say it, but it's the truth. It's the truth. It's, you know, it's just, cities have problems. And just Mike Max to my mind, it's not a coincidence he's making this during this election cycle because he's trying to drive a narrative. Like I said, gutsy when you're the flagship of the basketball team to tell people not to come downtown for the games, but whatever. There is a misnomer people are saying. That I've had people who have implied, well, you know, when was it so bad? Because I used to walk downtown all the time. I used to get done with work and I'd walk home and I never had a problem. Same thing for people today. They're saying, well, what are you talking about? It's bad today. I walk down the street. You're right. No, I'm not saying that it's not. It never was as bad. It even is not as bad today. Today, Saturday, I was over at Comanchex, over up on the north side, right across the river. And I'd forgotten something in the car. I walked out of the Comanchex by myself, got something out of the car, went back in. No one clubbed me over the head. No one, you know, slipped me a Mickey. No one shot me. Nothing like that happened. No, you can do this. This stuff does happen. It's the argument of basically, well, it's happened to me. How could it have been bad? Well, there are people right now who are driving every morning to a gas station who leave their car running unlocked with the keys in it as they go into the gas station to get a cup of coffee and come on out and the car is there and they get in and they drive away. It doesn't mean there isn't a tremendous amount of danger in doing that because there's a decent chance you're going to come out someday and that car is not going to be there. And B, just because it happened okay, it doesn't mean every day it's happening okay, nor does it mean every place it's happening is okay, and that doesn't mean in every gas station is happening okay. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, there have been times, now I'm a big guy, and there have been times I've walked downtown by myself, didn't have any problems. Well, sometimes I had some people that were getting a little harassing as far as wanting donations or, you know, a few bucks. But it's just, that's the city. I had some people say, you know, I would be alone in a bar, but I'd be in a bar and I'd leave and I'd go into a cab and they'd take me right to my house. So, I mean, it was stuff like that. But no, I'm not saying that it's not like everyone who ever walked outside by themselves always ran into trouble. That's just a false equivocator. That's a way to basically discount the point that Minneapolis has always had a seedy past. It always has. It absolutely has. And, you know, you can even go back to when they started that town where the Native Americans were double-crossed by the white population, where the quartermaster over at Fort Snelling double-crossed the commander of the Fort Snelling and went out and plotted his land in the middle of the night to basically steal the best piece of property on the St. Anthony side. A theft. That's the city started with a theft, for God's sakes. Or dishonesty, at least. No, I'm sorry. I mean, don't sit there and try to say, well, I walked this time, it was fine. Yeah, but there are a lot of people like that guy that died in 2002 who went out that night and was trying to walk home from a bar and never made it. There's trouble, and you got to be careful. I would highly recommend, I've told my kids, don't ever go into the downtown by yourself. Make sure you go with a friend. Always. And don't ever go down alleys. Don't ever go down in places where you know you're going to have trouble if all of a sudden something bad happens. No, they're smart and stupid, and you can go on out there and keep saying to me, Matt, look at me. I got my car running. I went inside the gas station. I came back out. Car was still here until the day you come back. I was like, where did my car go? Yeah, boo-hoo. Final note for Mike Max and everyone else. Leave. Seriously, dude, I'm going to call your bluff. Seriously, I'm going to call your bluff. If you hate it that much, why are you here? Move to Tulsa. Move to Oklahoma City. Well, Oklahoma City probably has got similar problems as Minneapolis. Move to Tulsa or move to Salt Lake City or move someplace where Republicans rule and you can sit there and you can badmouth those Democrats all day long. And yeah, you're not going to have the liveliness and entertainment of a Topeka. In a Topeka, it's Minneapolis, St. Paul. But you won't have, I mean, for you, you're already happy with strip malls and chain restaurants. So you'll be fine down there. You'll be fine in a Wichita or Topeka. Go knock yourself out. Because if this is really miserable, you should go. You'll sell your house in like three freaking days. You'll know, it's not like people don't want to come into Minneapolis. They will gladly wave to you as you leave. Unless you're only doing this for bravado. And the reality is you really do like it here. And that someone's calling you out saying, well, I didn't say I wanted to leave. Then what the hell are you saying? Because if you're saying it's a hellhole and you don't like it and it's miserable and you can't stand it, well, then get the F out, jackass. We'll let the door hit you in the butt on the way out. We could care less. People will, you'll make it onto one of those TPT historical things. Like once in a while, there was a guy named Mike Max, and boy, oh boy, did he piss off a lot of people in town one day. You know, you're going to, that will be how you're remembered. But no one's going to, the world is not going to stop because you leave. They'll hire someone tomorrow to replace you. And they actually might like Minneapolis. So either fish or cut bait. Either shut up and stay here and stop just putting out political talking points or leave. Adios. Bon voyage. Good luck. This is me calling you out and calling your bluff. 952-946-6205. Julie first. Let's go to Julie in Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Julie.
Hi, just a few quick comments. You know, I was listening to Mike Max on the show on The Neighbor yesterday, and these are the words that came out of his mouth. Well, I've worked been in downtown working for 37 and a half years, and I probably put in $3,000 just for parking, so I have a right to say my opinion. Well, you know, my family's been in Minneapolis for 75 years. We've spent way over $100,000 in property taxes and Minneapolis taxes. I would not expect Minneapolis to throw out the red carpet before me when I'm downtown. I have a friend who, he's an older guy and he plays music. He's got a day job, but he plays music downtown once or twice a week. And he walks to his car. I said, do you feel safe? I was kind of, do you feel safe? Yeah, I never had a problem. And he meets his wife down there. They went to a play about 3 weeks ago, and he walked four or five blocks. It was between 10 and 10:30 at night, so it wasn't, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning. Didn't your mother say nothing good ever happens after midnight? But anyway, that's kind of where that is. So,
well, and Julie, thank you, Julie. I want to get to Gary. Gary in Minneapolis, let's get his call in here really quick. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, Matt, what you're talking about reminds me of Trump, Make America Great Again. And this is that backlash from the Civil Rights Bill. And it was put us on the pathway to equality for many Americans that were left out. And I can make a quote about LBJ, too. When he passed the Civil Rights Bill, he said, Hubert, this one belongs to you. I'm afraid we did the right thing, but we elected Republicans for many years to come. Yep. And that's what he said.
Gary, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I got to get to Jeff Stein here. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I have some guy named Tom here on one of the feeds saying, boy, he sure has got you worked up. Well, I love my city. You know, if you don't like it here, you know, fine. Go. But I love Minneapolis, St. Paul. It kicks ass. And Minnesota kicks ass, too. So you don't like it here, you can go in any direction. Bye. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert and noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books. Make fantastic Valentine's Day gift, kids. Trust me, she'll swoon if you give her a Jeff Stein book. Also, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is his daily show he does down there, and KXEL is where you find his Iowa Politics Report. Hi, Jeff.
Well, that was rather sexist of you.
Well, they'll swoon. Well, I mean,
You said she'll swoon. Well, why can't women buy gifts and have the male swoon?
You're absolutely correct. Or your partner will swoon. Even exactly. Better. More inclusive.
The gift recipient will swoon. And, you know, what the heck? Buy two copies.
Boy, this erotic talk on AM 950 is a little out of hand. Boy, oh boy, we'll swoon over you.
We got to have you and Jeff record like a really sexy ad. We'll have like a Barry White effect on it. Yeah,
it's white chocolate. Here it is. I'm not going to do that. No.
It's but you already did. Yeah. You just did. We're already in trouble.
I am not exactly. I'm not exactly the romance expert, but I know your books will make everyone's partner swoon.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That's a little better. I don't know if what I'm going to do will work. Let's find out.
Oh yeah.
For sale.
Come get the books.
Too much of anything.
Okay, that's probably enough.
If you're headed to the orgy, well, no, never mind. Make sure there's a bulk discount. So, you know. Sorry.
Can you imagine somebody getting in the car right now to come home? They're in the car. They're on their way to a diner, and they hear Barry White and you talking about a bulk discount.
Yes. Well, I mean, they'll just, damn it, McNeil. That's what you'll hear. That's the crickets in this town right now. Damn it, McNeil. All right. So
everyone's out of the mood. There you go.
It's a Wednesday. Yeah, come on, get through the work week. All right. I want your opinion. Okay. Was it a good idea for the RNC to go on out there and imply the January 6th insurrectionists were just, you know, legitimate political discourse? Or was this a dumb idea? Because you're starting to see a larger and larger contingent of Republicans saying, what the hell are you doing?
Completely dumb idea.
Dumb.
Completely dumb idea for either political party in a given situation for what would be political reasons. This is going to get awkward. For political reasons to censure someone. Now, did the RNC, for example, censure a candidate who indicated that she was a witch? You remember that one?
Yeah, the Delaware Senate candidate. Yeah.
Okay. Did they in any way censure candidates because of comments that were made of a racial no.
Matt Gaetz. I mean, Matt Gaetz is a prime example. I don't believe he's been censured.
Well, no, this is the point. They don't censure anybody. It's one thing for something like a party's national committee to say, we have an incumbent president, and therefore we really don't want to have any opposition. I don't know that they should put their thumb on the scale to the degree that they did, frankly, in 2016. The RNC did, where they totally intertwined their organization with the Trump organization. Okay, I'm not sure that's appropriate either. But how in the world can you claim it's a fair nomination process, whether you're talking at the presidential level or at a congressional level anywhere? Dog catcher, how can you claim it's a fair nomination process when the committee takes sides like that? And the other thing that is fascinating about it is the way that it was done was watered down. Did you see this reporting by Politico?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so it's David Bossie, and I trust the audience is familiar. Mr. Bossie, a Trump supporter, co-authored books with Corey Lewandowski, if that helps put a little more color on it. But he apparently was the one who wrote the thing, and the phrase legitimate political discourse did not appear in the original draft of the resolution. Now, I'm reading from Politico. They're crediting the Washington Post, so I want to be fair about it. This is a Washington Post story. Bossie's version said the January 6th committee had a disregard for minority rights. I assume they mean political minority. And disregard for due process, and seemed intent on advancing a political agenda to buoy the Democrat Party's bleak electoral prospects. That was the original draft. They then edited it down to legitimate political discourse. It still did not get to any committee members until 1:38 a.m. Friday morning. They were supposed to vote on it before lunch. So this thing was really rammed through, but the question is, how did it get changed to the softer language? Because it was a complete political bomb otherwise, wasn't it?
It was actually pretty – it was much more incendiary. I mean, this is bad enough as it is, but it was basically saying, you know, we don't care. You know, we're just delusional, basically. You know, and it brings up an interesting – McConnell's comments today on it. You know, okay, so the Republican game plan for 2022 is pretty easy to see. They want to go after for Biden on the economy, on coronavirus measures, and for crime. And one, the economy is starting to turn around. As a matter of fact, his numbers on the economy are going up and going up well. It looks like – I mean, are you hoping that if all of a sudden all the restrictions are lifted in March that people are still furious about it by November? I don't think that's going to work. And then, you know, in Minnesota here, we just had the Amir Locke shooting, which really took a lot of the wind out of the sails of the constant daily, oh, cops are angels. Now all of a sudden you have the no-knock warrant and he gets gunned down legally carrying a gun in an apartment he was legally in, and he was not the subject of the search warrant. And so you have, you know, these things going blowing up. I mean, it's to a point, I think what you're seeing is the remnants of the old Republicans, basically, who have gone along with this far-right shift, basically standing up and saying, okay, I still have to go into a suburban district, which is a 55-45, and convince people to vote for me, and now you're basically forcing me to actually argue with you about whether 1-6 was an insurrection or was a picnic, because I don't remember too many picnics where people are whacking cops with hockey sticks. And so,
well, then you have not been to Mississippi.
Well, it's they do it's St. Louis good times, but you know, but no, but I mean,
yeah,
that
broke out at a blues game.
Yeah, it's, but I mean, you really do have this problem where the you know, they're the old traditional Republicans are trying to scream at this new far right entity, you can't do this and win elections. And whether or not they're listening remains to be seen.
Well, I actually wrote this for the Iowa Politics Report for tomorrow. That was not a blatant plug. It just happens to be a fact. And again, I was using the Politico reporting, pointing out that McConnell has taken a very different path from McCarthy. McConnell is the one pointing out that this was a dangerous insurrection. McConnell's the one who has not talked to Donald Trump since. McConnell's the one whose wife gave up her cabinet post, yes, a week early, but still resigned, okay, because of all of this. You had other GOP senators who were following their leader. Meanwhile, you got McCarthy, who goes to Mar-a-Lago regularly, who has banked on the fact that voters don't care about January 6th, and they just want to know, what have you done for gas prices, et cetera, focus on those issues. Okay, I get that, especially if 1-6 is not to your favor, you would like to not discuss it. But the point of it is, you got McConnell trying to get a majority in the Senate with his tactic. You got McCarthy trying to get a majority in the House with the exact opposite tactic. What happens if both are successful, in other words, both chambers flip to GOP, how in the world are they going to govern, and how in the world are they going to then try to get the presidency back in 2024? You know, I mean, what do they have in common? They want to win a majority. Okay, if they go about it in very different ways, I don't know, Matt, how you reconcile those two positions, especially if you're a member of one chamber who has a different view than your leader.
Now, I to a point, I agree with you, because the Democrats can screw something up better than anyone I've ever seen. You know, the easy layup, they can somehow miss the entire backboard and break a leg at the same time. But at the same time, I want to one thing I will say is, it's you know what McCarthy is doing. I mean, you look at the numbers. A third of Republicans feel as if what happened on 1-6 was wrong, and they do not agree with it. One third. Mm-hmm. Well, let's do the math. Pretty much all the Democrats think it was bad. Most of the independents think it was bad. If a third of the Republicans are there, McCarthy seems to have much more of that primary strategy where he's like, okay, we'll win with the red meat that's going to appeal to the masses, and then beg to hope that basically they can say, we never said that, for the rest of the general election. Meanwhile, McConnell's already looking at the general election saying, hey, I already know the Republicans are going to, you know, vote for Republicans. Let's look at already the game plan for later. McConnell's just looking at it on a political scale. McConnell's is a much safer plan McCarthy's is kind of dancing on the razor's edge. And if I'm going to expect one to work, I'd expect the Senate. And also understand, the Senate's in a much more precarious position. Democrats are more likely to hold that one or even pick up a seat there than, you know, the House seems to be a little bit easier for the Republicans. But still, I'm McCarthy. That is just a stupid plan, because at some point you're going to have to start running a general election campaign. And if a third of your own voters disagree with you, sure, it worked fine for the primary, but then you run into the buzzsaw.
Well, with regard to handicapping, until we know what all of the redistricting looks like, I'm not prepared to say who's got a better chance to win the House. Mm-hmm. More recently, we've been hearing that Democratic endorsed plans have been approved, and that to literally where it looks like the map is more favorable to Democrats in terms of retaining seats and lumping incumbents in together, have Republicans be together. So that point aside, yeah, you got to run the general election campaign, and you've got to hope that if you ignore January 6th, which is what McCarthy's trying to do,
yes,
you can then focus on COVID and inflation, et cetera. To your earlier point, if COVID is not a factor by November, nobody's going to care what happened in January. Nobody's going to care about any flip-flops on masks. Nobody's going to care about that if their kids are back in school full-time, if they're reasonably healthy. If for some reason inflation, the Fed's actions to increase interest rates actually does slow the economy down so that inflation is lower, that's what we're going to vote on. Now to that point, McCarthy is saying, forget about the Washington stuff. Talk about kitchen table issues. Okay, that's great. But what you define, Matt, is exactly the distinction between the House and the Senate. The House is a more volatile body by nature because they are up for election every 2 years, every single one of them. The Senate is the more deliberative body. It's a third that's up every 2 years for those six-year terms. Obviously, McConnell's playing the long game. And McCarthy is playing the, I want to be Speaker of the House immediately, and I'll deal with the ramifications later. And that's what's fascinating, is that, you know, the Republicans thought they had the world by the tail when they had Speaker Paul Ryan, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Donald Trump as president. They thought, here comes the agenda. Well, the House and Senate couldn't get along then, and they supposedly were on the same page. Imagine if you've got this fundamental core distinction between the leadership of the two bodies.
I don't even want to think about the Romney family reunions at this point. One of the things
you didn't watch it before, though.
No,
who
likes 2% milk? No, okay. So you just brought something up, though, which I think is a very important thing. Kitchen table issues. The Democrats actually do have a window here for this reason. Let's look at the House candidates. What do the House candidates really want to do? A lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them. One, 2020 was robbed. Trump was robbed in 2020. 1/6 insurrectionists are political prisoners. They did nothing wrong. And as you said, I mean, if it's kitchen table issues, if the Democrats can come on as like, hey, did you have a big medical bill because of COVID? We want to try to fix that. We're working on getting the economy going back and working on that together. We're creating jobs. We've got the greatest jobs president in the history of the planet. So we've got these things going. If the Democrats focus on a very, not an exaggeration, a very just linear, you know, presentation of their plans, and the Republicans just constantly can't get away from Trump won in 2020 and 1/6 was nothing. Well, they're in big trouble, because once you get to that general election, people do want those kitchen table issues.
You can focus on election integrity without making reference to Trump was robbed in 2020. They're different issues. And I think it's pretty clear. And again, I think McCarthy is following this path of saying, let's not talk about the RNC. Let's not talk about January 6th. And let's not talk about Trump 2020. Let's talk about how you are right now in 2022, and is this the path you want the country to go on? Now, that's what's going to be somewhat ironic. If, in fact, the potential future speaker says, let's focus on the future, let's focus on kitchen table issues, the Democrats want to talk about that too, I would assume, especially if things turn as you're suggesting they might. heaven forbid you have an issues-driven campaign.
Well, like I said, the Democrats are good for ignoring the low-hanging fruit. They do have the medical, the medical side, and they do have those jobs reports. Both of those are pretty good right now. That's what you run on for the time being if things other get better. But if it becomes them screaming, you know, that what happened 2 years ago is the main thing, Republicans are in big trouble. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to get into you've always said it's not the main crime, it's the cover-up. And my God, there are actually some serious charges that could be coming down the line here against a bunch of people, whether it's tearing up documents or trying to get fake electors. We'll talk about that when we do return. Jeff Stein is joining us on a Wednesday, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. The Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much to Todd Collett, who's sponsoring AM 950 all this week. You can too. If you'd like more information, 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885. Todd wants to make sure he mentioned go to fairfight.com. That's fairfight.com. Make sure every vote is counted this election cycle by going over and joining fairfight.com. Jeff Stein joining us with his usual weekly visit. Jeff, you've often said it's not the crime, it's the cover up. And boy, oh boy. We're getting a great lesson in that because the National Archives, you first discover, I'm a little missing something here. You can fill me in if I think I've got it here. It sounds like Trump had ripped up a bunch of documents and stuff that was supposed to be saved during his White House stay to prevent from those things going to the National Archives as ripped up documents, which I can't imagine was a piece, made them very happy. They stashed them down at Mar-a-Lago, but did tell people we've got them down here. Now the National Archives has come back and said we need them. They get them. They're all just boxes of torn up documents. And now they have actually referred to the Department of Justice for destruction of official documents, which, once again, not sexy, but it's got teeth. And when you open up a box from Trump and it's, hamburger grease stained, ripped up pieces of paper, it's pretty easy to say, well, that does seem like destruction of property to me.
Okay, the Big Mac wrappers were intact. All right, so let's start with that. Now, during the presidency, there were many reports that Trump had a habit of making notes at a meeting. And then he would rip up the notes in tiny little pieces. Now, many people know that there is a strategy that if you take notes as someone is talking, you remember it better. It's not that you're going to retain those pieces of paper. And frankly, I've tried, and it's true. If you just sit and listen to somebody talk, you retain a certain amount. But if you actually go through the process of taking notes, you retain it better. Well, he had this habit of ripping things up, and it was partly a nervous habit also. They had to get on him and say, no, you're now the president. You can, every piece of paper belongs to the government. It has to go to the archives, et cetera, et cetera. And they played all sorts of hack trying to get him to not rip things up. That's over here. How much of this is people scooping that kind of stuff up and getting it out of there with the thought that somebody who bought stock in the Scotch Tape Company was going to reassemble it? Don't know. How much of it was, let's spirit things out of the White House in the dead of night to cover up our tracks and just say that it showed up with, the president's neckties and belts when we moved things? Don't know. How much of it was he used that as the Southern White House and there were documents down there that just weren't returned to Washington?
Sure.
We don't know enough just yet, but the concept that there are packing boxes full of, in essence, confetti, that's not a good look, without any question. Now, again, I mentioned the stuff that had been reported during the presidency because that was an issue that was mentioned. So it may be nothing more than, I'm the president, you can't tell me what to do, and so I'm going to rip this stuff up, and people kept it. But then why do you send it to Mar-a-Lago? Why not make it the National Archives problem?
Well, and once again, it's like the emulence clause. I mean, yeah, they violated it, and you could basically hold them accountable. It's the archives doing this, I think, is actually going to cause the Trump family more problems than they think. The other issue here is something that's also come to light. Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, the rest of that idiot legal team they were the ones, it sounds like, were behind the fake electors. We're trying to, in Michigan, trying to confiscate a county's, voting machines. There's a lot of Republicans who are like, I'm not going to go to jail for you guys. And they're starting to come out and talk.
Your bigger issue came out as you've been on the air, and that is that Peter Navarro has been subpoenaed.
Ah.
Okay, now Navarro, of course, is the one who boasted in his recent book, The Green Bay Sweep, his plan to have Pence remand votes to states. I mean, he laid it all out there, and so now they want Peter Navarro to testify.
Ooh.
Because he was very clear about all of this. Now, well, Peter Navarro has not been shy.
Now, I sure love when people plead the fifth. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll post the Iowa Politics Report. Hour two is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. We are still doing AM 950 Wordle. Till the end of this hour, you could win yourself a 2022 AM 950 calendar. All you need to do is give us a word. It doesn't matter how many letters are in it. It just has to be a word where the following letters are in order. S as in Sam, Q as in quiet, and R as in Romeo. S, Q, R. Already got quite a few. You can either call Brett and at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, give him that information, your word, and let him know who you are. Or you can go to the live streams of the show, which are on, of course, AM 950 on Facebook and Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. You can enter in your word there, and it is officially in. Once we get all the words, if it's a legit word, we'll put it into the drawing. A random person will win the calendar at the end of the show. We're doing this all this week, next week as well. So get your AM 950 Wordle word in for your chance to win the calendar. Brett. Did you catch any of the Olympics the last few days?
I have not. No, not the past few days. I'm probably going to watch a lot of it next week when I'm going to be out of town, do a little relaxing.
Well, I will say this. First of all, do you remember the name Lindsay Jacob Ellis? Do you remember her?
Unfortunately, no. I'm not going to bell for me.
All right. This is – do you know the – what is it? It's the snowboard race where you've got a long course – and it's not slalom. It's a course down. It's a little bit like the Red Bull. It's a little like the Red Bull thing that they do over at in St. Paul at the cathedral, where you have this course now there that's on skates and it's insanity. This is not much better. It's a snowboard. But a few years back, Lindsay was leading up until the end. I mean, she had a massive lead. And she really did not take it seriously till the end. And right before the finish line, she crashed and ended up finishing second.
That rings a bell. Yeah, story. Yeah, yeah.
That was 2006 in Turin, okay. I believe it was. And she won gold yesterday. Our first gold medal for the United States. She came down, and that was a much closer race. And she, but she pulled it out. Oldest female Olympic gold medalist in history, 36 years old.
I was thinking if she was 2006 doing that, that's 16 years later. That's impressive to go 16 years between Olympics and win a gold.
A fantastic story. I couldn't be happier for her, too. I mean, talk about living your life with that. Now you've got the gold. You deserve that.
She's not from Minnesota, is she?
No, I think Colorado.
Oh, it sounds like something a Minnesota person would do.
Yeah.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
She was a mile ahead, and she just didn't take it seriously. And this time, even though she got a little ahead, she was seriously trying to do the fastest run she could. You learn from that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so, Michaela Schifrin, you see her?
No, not yet.
She's a slalom skier, the best on the planet. When you know how NBC does these things, and it's like, let's take before we go out to the slopes, let's take 5 minutes and find out more about this athlete, right? We caught Schifrin's little biopic. She's been part of the Olympics for a while. Her dad died not that long ago. And when they were doing the interview and she was showing the pictures of her dad, I mentioned to my wife as we were watching this, she's not She's clearly having still a hard time with this. She is probably the best slalom skier on the planet. On her first race, she missed the fourth gate. On her second race, and she was eliminated. Once you miss a gate on slalom, you're eliminated. On her second race, she missed the fourth gate again. She, you know, she's an athlete. She's there. She's competing. I hope she, you know, I hope whatever decision she makes is a good one. But I think it's honest. I mean, there part of me wants to say, you know, no one's going to get mad at you if you walk. You know, just step aside, get the alternate American Olympian in there and go for that. You know, just go home. But at the same time, I also know part of me says maybe the best thing for her is to just get her out there and try to get her to ski through this. Because it's clear her mind, the fact that this happened twice, it's clear that her mind is not 100% there.
Yeah, that would be tough to try to compete at the highest stage, and yeah, you have a lot on your mind. I don't blame her for going through some struggles.
I would make an argument this. I think the problem that she had on that second one, that was last night. Oh God, I just broke my heart when I saw that. The qualifying, I don't think she has to go as hard as she has to. I would make this. I'm not a skier. I'm not. I would just make the suggestion on the qualifying run. You can pull it down a notch or two. You'll easily still qualify. Just get down the slopes. Get down the slopes. Get that one run down under pressure and then go. That'd be the case there. You see our Minnesota boy on the curling there took out the Russians.
Oh, that I did hear about. Yeah, that's always fun to have.
Nice, nice shot. Did you see him put that last rock right in the middle of the bullseye?
Yes.
That was nice, just because I want to see. The Russians, I might have time for the story a little bit later. The Russians are in trouble. Because now all of a sudden there are some illegal drugs that, not necessarily steroids, but are showing up in that super-duper figure skater of theirs. And so they have postponed the medal ceremony for the team figure skating event because they want some more answers about her. And so they might end up getting disqualified because of that.
Who knew the Russians would cheat at the Olympics?
The Russians, who are not there under the Russian flag,
but because of
their constant cheating, are there under the Russian Olympic flag, which, okay, what's the point? But still, you're shocked by this. They're a bunch of cheaters. The Russians are cheaters, man. That's what they are. And I'm sorry, I don't have any problem saying that. I don't. It's just predictable. And now the Russians are like, no, just give them the medals and we'll be done. We'll be done. No need to investigate. Well, trust me, I think the Chinese are going to, you know, are going to be insistent on everyone gets a blood test on this one. So I'm not going to be able to catch it tonight. I got to run out for a kids thing tonight. But gosh, I've been enjoying it. It just is painful to watch, especially like I talked about the extreme sports. Watching the Americans just kind of, ugh. We've got women's half pipe tonight. We have one American in the final, but she's the top rated one. So we'll have to see if she wins that. And then Sean White and a bevy of American snowboarders made the half pipe part of the men. So we'll have to see how they do there. But they got the kid from Japan. He's getting like 17 feet off the side of the half pipe. I mean, that alone scares me to death.
Yeah. That's a lot to fly.
One final thing about this. Something's going on with the – you know how you and I have talked about the NASCAR crash on ice? That is the short track speed skating? There seems to be something going on because almost every race the Americans are getting disqualified or getting knocked out and there's no penalty called. And I'm starting to get a little bothered by how frequently this is happening. That either our guy gets penalized and thrown out, or clearly someone looks like they penalized our guy and that person doesn't get called. I'm getting a little miffed about this.
A little conspiracy, maybe the Russians and the Chinese in it together.
Two man luge is still one of the most awkward things I've ever seen in my life. I don't know anyone I want to do that with. No.
I wouldn't want to do the luge solo. That thing is scary.
You know what would make this a little bit more uncomfortable? Just snuggling up together right there as we go down together. Nope, not going to happen. When I get nervous, odd things happen. I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. Get your AM 950 world submissions in. How about I say, like, I'll get off that right there. Get your Wordle submissions in. You got an hour, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And I should mention Senator Nick Frentz is going to join us. Senate District 19, he's Democrat of the Day, coming up here at the bottom of the hour. The Minnesota coronavirus update for today for the Minnesota Department of Health includes 3,833 newly reported cases, 40 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now 11,722. Tuesday's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Tuesday. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a seven-day rolling average through February 1st was down again from, I think it was 14.7, now it's 14.3%. It had been over 10 points higher on January 21st. Anything over 10 puts Minnesota at high risk. So we're getting closer to the 10, hopefully before too long. But still, want to remind people, that's basically one out of every six people, maybe one out of seven. Let's see what my math is. Yeah, one out of every seven. We'll do it. One out of every seven. One out of every seven tests that's coming through is coming back positive still. So get vaccinated. Wear a mask. Through February 8th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 11,061. 1,161. That's down from 1,164. Report on February 7th, of those hospitalized, 179 people are in intensive care. That's up from 178, one higher. 982 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 986. The 178 ICU admissions are the fewest in Minnesota since September 7th. They were as high as 374 on December 16th. The 986 non-ICU admissions are the fewest since November 13th. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 66 staffed adult ICU beds available in the state, up from 64 on February 7th. 23 pediatric ICU beds available, which is up from 13 on February 7th. As of February 7th, they reported that 3,859,922 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,619,453 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 2,087,153 third dose booster shots. We are very high on booster shots. I think we're like fifth or sixth in the country on booster shots. But we are, I think, around 19th when it comes to vaccinations. So basically what's happened here is we're kind of plateauing out. We've got all the people that are going to get vaccinated, but we actually are doing much better than most of this country is on the booster shots. Get vaccinated. This is not going away. And yeah, I think you got to be careful with that. I do want to take a quick moment here. When we were talking with Jeff about low-hanging fruit for the DFL and the Democrats out there, the one of the things that, you know, God willing, the Omicron variant surge dwindles down. We say goodbye to the COVID, and we can kind of move on to a more normal life, still with the occasional flare-ups and outbreaks in various towns, but overall as a society moving forward. Undeniably, Republicans under that scenario are going to come on out and scream about how we got through this together. See, we got through this. And it is incredibly important, I think, for Democrats to not allow the people that fought vaccines, fought face masks, fought social distancing, fought common sense measures to try to keep this pandemic under control, take credit for what happened. Because you need to look at them and it's like, you were not the solution, you were the problem. We had far more people die because of Republican policies than needed to. We had far more people get sick because of Republican policies than needed to. Do not sit here and try to take credit for something that you fought us doing anything on. We would try to close a school, you'd scream, keep it open! We'd try to put face masks on people, you'd say, face masks are face diapers! We'd say, get vaccinated, you're saying they're magnetized and your blood will turn green. You did not help us. You hurt us. And your policies directly led to people dying and people getting sick and people going bankrupt because of medical debt. So do not allow, Democrats, do not allow them to, thank God we got through this together. You should, dare you. Because of your policies, more people died. Because of your policies, more people got sick. Because of your policies, more people are bankrupt. And throw that in their face. And if you don't have the guts to do that, you're taking, you are the party of healthcare. You are the party of trying to get cheap, affordable healthcare. If you can't politically say the truth that I tried to save people, the Republicans tried to kill y'all. It's just the truth. They didn't try to get you vaccinated. They didn't try to get you wear a mask. They didn't try to social distance. They didn't try to close schools. They didn't. They demanded that an Applebee's be held open and no one have to wear a mask because reasons. Do not allow them to take credit for what you did, because then you're just asking for your ass to get kicked. And I'm tired of it. You have to look at them in the face and say, you did not help. You hurt. You and your policies caused people to die. You caused people to get sick. You caused people to get bankrupt. And if you don't have the guts to do that, well, then just get out of politics, because for God's sakes, that is what you call low-hanging fruit. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Oh, good. State Patrol is no longer going to beat up on journalists. Yay. Yay. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Ooh, I got breaking news here. So, you know how yesterday we talked a little bit about this snowmobile accident? It didn't seem to be adding up a little bit.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
Well, here's the news. The top conservation officer at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources was involved in a snowmobile crash last week that seriously injured a state senator. The fact that was not mentioned in the first two accident reports filed by the Morrison County Sheriff's Department. Once again, without a doubt in my mind, if these were Democratic senators, the Morrison County Sheriff's Department would have actually had the, I think, a very different reaction than they had here. I'm going to be very honest. Colonel Rodman Smith, director of the DNR Enforcement Division, filed his own DNR report on the incident, saying that Senator John Jasinski, the Republican from Faribault, ran into the rear end of Smith's snowmobile while Smith slowed to make a 90-degree left turn. They were trail riding with others on a VIP event organized by the Snowmobile Advocacy Group. According to the enforcement chief's reports, Jasinski's snowmobile tipped over, and a trailing snowmobile operated by Senator Mark Johnson, East Grand Forks, ran into Jasinski on the ground. Johnson was not injured, but Jasinski's injuries included a broken pelvis and a fractured vertebrae, according to the resources there. So Smith had slowed down to take a 90-degree turn. Jasinski rams into him. Now, that first of all, this other person involved, this is the first time we've heard about this. The Morrison County Sheriff's Department did not have this in their report. They are lying. Ta-da! So this guy is there. He's slowing down to take the right turn. Jasinski rams into him, which that doesn't sound like 10 miles an hour to me. That was the other thing that they were talking about. And then he got hit when he was on the ground by the trailing snowmobile driven by Senator Mark Johnson. As I ran towards the two snowmobiles, others in the group were already rolling the snowmobiles apart. Smith wrote in the report, I could see there was an individual that appeared to have been under the snowmobiles. He was referring to Jasinski, who was conscious and could speak clearly but was in pain. Jasinski told Smith the scene that the left turn came up suddenly. He was slowing to make the turn when the ski on his snowmobile crashed into the rear of the snowmobile's track of Smith's machine. He's following way too close. That's kind of what's going on there. The other DNR conservation officer who was on the scene of the crash included at least three who had been assisted in the approximately 75 snowmobiles participating in the Minnesota United Snowmobiles Association. Just looking through the rest of the story here. The crash happened about 12:45. Once again, there was no decision to test Jasinski or Johnson for drugs or alcohol after the crash by the Morrison County Sheriffs, which is really interesting because I kind of get the impression that if it was anyone else, they would have been tested. I kind of get the strong impression about that. We once again hope that the senator heals well, but already now we've got some problems because Morrison County Sheriff has been not honest. Some people might even call that lying about what exactly happened there. The Minnesota Department of Public Safety will pay the ACLU hundreds of thousands of dollars to settle a lawsuit brought by journalists who were injured while covering civil unrest in the Twin Cities. The ACLU filed the lawsuit June 2020 on behalf of independent journalists and the Communication Workers of America who some were injured by the Minnesota State Patrol while covering the protests following the killings of George Floyd and Dante Wright. The lawsuits allege that the agency violated journalists' rights and accused law enforcement of deliberately targeting journalists with unlawful force, something we documented a hell of a lot here, especially after George Floyd. They clearly were going after the journalists. Clearly. That included firing hard projectiles and tear gas at reporters, ordering them to dispense despite being exempt from curfews, arresting them, and interfering with the media's ability to observe and document the protests. A federal judge recently approved an $825,000 settlement. Hey, taxpayers, guess what? We get to pay that. And a permanent injunction that prohibits the Minnesota State Patrol from attacking or arresting journalists. The court's groundbreaking injunction will hold the state's law enforcement accountable and require them to respect the First Amendment. Minnesota Department of Public Safety said it will also pay for an independent external review of all internal affairs cases related to alleged trooper mistreatment of media in May of 2020 and April 2021, among the items, other items in the settlement. State Patrol will require an internal affairs investigation of any allegation of media mistreatment or misconduct. The State Patrol will require immediate notification of a supervisor when a member of the media is arrested or detained. DPS will deploy a media ombudsman and media field liaison in mass arrest situations. State Patrol will contract with an expert to provide training to troopers on interacting with the media and the First Amendment, with the initial training session open to any member of the media that would like to attend. State Patrol will provide training on crowd control for all cadets and additional data training for the troopers. For the next 6 years, State Patrol is prohibited for arresting, threatening or to arrest or using physical force, chemical agents against journalists, ordering them stop photographing or recording protests, making journalists disperse, or seizing or intentionally damaging a journalist's equipment. I mean, I'm sorry. My gut feeling is they're going to just do this and again, and they'll say, oopsie, what are you going to do? Until someone actually holds it. I mean, $825,000, you got to remember, these guys are playing with house money. They make these violations. They can break these laws. The taxpayers are the ones that are covering their butts. And I guarantee you Republicans will demand, well, you know, it's not ideal, but – you know, it's not fair to take that out of the State Patrol budget, so I think we should give them the money for this settlement and just, you know, understand that you know, this is an activist judge who basically was over, you know, this is just the fair thing to do. It is wildly disturbing. Wildly disturbing how badly the police, and not just the State Patrol, but all police, treated the media in the aftermath of George Floyd and Dante Wright. The problem here is, you guys, and this is one of the reasons why people get so damn upset with the police in these situations. Your problem is not the media covering the mob. It's not covering the protest, not covering the anger. Your problem is the police officer that screwed up in the first place. And until you basically start holding them accountable with 10 times the fury that you hold the media accountable for shooting pictures and video of what the hell's going on, well, no one's going to take you seriously. And that's just the god-awful truth. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Democrat of the day, Senator Nick French, Senate District 19, Mankato, St. Peter. We'll talk to him when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Reminder, you still have about 20 minutes here to get your AM 950 Wordle words in by either calling Brett 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Or by you can also post them up on the Facebook live streams at AM 950 Radio, as well as also at Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. You can get them there. The word has to – it can be any length word. It has to be a legit word. We got a lot of great ones too. S as in Sam, Q as in quiet, R as in Romeo. So those three letters have to be in order in the word. Submit your word, and you could possibly win yourself an AM 950 calendar. Ooh, it's minty fresh. If you would like to get the calendar, by the way, and would rather not play Wordle because so many people in your social media timelines are playing it, it's driving you crazy. Well, you can just go over to AM 950 Radio, go to the members page, sign up, become a member, make a one-time donation or a recurring donation, and basically as a thank you, we'll send you one of the calendars. Go find am950radio.com. am950radio.com. Is the senator about at this point there, Brett?
He said he's still in a meeting right now.
He's still in a meeting. This is the one of the problems with Democrat of the Day, is that you try to get people – and they are working senators and House reps. Trust me, come summer, it's not a problem. But while they're in session, it becomes a mess sometimes. I'm hoping – let them know we have – you know, I'll get them in if we have the few minutes. We'll try to get in. Senator Nick Frentz is the senator, District 19, down Mankato, St. Peter area. We'll hopefully get him on in here before too long. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. In one of the more, this idea, Chad Helton, who has been under fire for running the Hennepin County Library System from his condo in Los Angeles, not Los Angeles, Minnesota, which I don't think there is a Los Angeles, Minnesota, I'm not mistaken.
They got a really good hockey team high school level.
It's Los Angeles, California, is where he's running the Hennepin County Library from. He's taking a voluntary leave of absence. Helton's leave took effect on February 2nd. County spokeswoman Carolyn Marinin said on Tuesday, he is one of two finalists for a chief librarian at the Seattle Public Library. Will undergo a public interview for the job on Thursday. Gee willikers, I wonder if he'll move to Seattle for that job. In Helton's absence, Assistant County Administrator Dan Rogan will provide direction, oversight, and support to the library's executive team. Is he in Prague? I don't want to split hairs here, but can we have a guy that's running the Hennepin County Library? I don't know. Maybe necessarily not in Hennepin County, but within the 7-county metro area, as opposed to thousands of miles away. Dear Lord, who is the moron who authorized this? Now, you say to yourself, Matt, in this day and age of coronavirus like this, no. My wife did HR for years. She was a hiring manager. She did this for years. She's not now. She's a project manager, but she did this stuff for years. When I explained this to her, I said, is this common? She goes, I've never heard anything like that, especially when the position is something like the Hennepin County Library. You don't have the guy that's running the Empire State Building gift shop running it from Miami. You know, you would want somebody, I don't know, on the ground in New York. At, I don't know, who occasionally could swing on by the Empire State Building gift shop. Oh, God, this is just, I mean, I'm going to presume the Assistant County Administrator, Dan Rogan, is actually in Hennepin County area, region, and not, you know, like I said, comically, someplace, you know, nowhere near Minneapolis, St. Paul. The team includes Amy McNally, Deputy Director. The library staffers released this. They're going to have an executive team that includes Amy McNally, Deputy Director of Public Services, Johanna Gennett, Deputy Director for Support Services, Patty Hentrick, Chief Financial Officer, Tisley Taylor, Library Human Resources Business Partner, and Allie Turney, Community Engagement Manager. The Hennepin County Board met Tuesday morning to discuss legal strategies pertaining to both Helton and Sheriff David Hutchinson, who announced last week he won't seek re-election after pleading guilty to drunken driving. The meeting was not open to the public. In a text message, Board Chair Marion Green confirmed that Helton was on leave, but said she could not discuss anything that happened in the meeting. Helton disclosed last summer that he had moved to California from the Twin Cities, saying he could run the library system remotely by video conferencing. He said he would return to Minnesota as needed. How often did this guy come back to Minnesota? Seriously. His move was initially accepted by county administrators who noted the large numbers of employers were working remotely. Yeah, but I mean, I've done remote shows here too, but I still, if need be, could jump in a car and be here at the radio station about 10, 15 minutes from my house if I had to be here. I don't think it would go over too well. It's like, I'll be right there. And I hung up the phone and I grabbed my luggage. I head to LAX to jump on a flight. And 5 hours later, if you can get a flight that quick. And who is paying for the flights, by the way?
That's a question right there.
Actually, that's a really good question. Who is paying for his flights back and forth to Minneapolis? Who was? I would like to know that. Don't tell me he was able to write those off as a business expense. Come on. This is just stupid. I mean, this really is stupid. His move was initially accepted by county administrators. Library workers, their unions, and the public sharply criticized the move, though. Responding to news of Helton's leave, Allie Furman, president of the Ask Me Local 2822, which represents library support staff, said Hennepin County residents and workers need a library director committed to the community here. We look forward to hopefully seeing some real leadership in the coming period. Hey, I don't need to get into your next hiring practice here. I'm just a trained chimp with a microphone here. But may I just suggest someone local, someone in the 7-county metro area, or I don't think Duluth would matter, or Rogers. That's just the same problem. They got to be somewhat local. I mean, how in the hell did someone okay this? I'm getting to that in a second. Furman had previously criticized Helton for supervising the library from California. In his statement, Rogan assured public library staffers that the change would not impact the everyday services of our library provide. Well, since there's going to be a director who is somewhat local, I got to imagine it's going to be better. In December, county officials required supervisors who wanted to work from outside Minnesota, Wisconsin to file an exemption by January 31st. Officials have declined to say if Helton or any other county supervisor filed a residency exemption calling for that private information or calling that private information. The only other – here's the fun part. The only other high-ranking Hennepin County official who doesn't live in Minnesota or Wisconsin is Michael Rossman, the county's chief human resources officer – has worked from Palm Springs, California throughout 2021. Rossman's staff, unlike Helton's, operates internally and does not interact directly with the public. Yeah, but can I make the observation? It would seem that Rossman's judgment has been skewed by the fact that he has been allowed to live in Palm Springs, California and do this job. I don't think it's really a reach if I was to say that the New York Public Library would not hire me to manage the New York Public Library from Minneapolis. I don't think it's a reach to say that the Los Angeles County Library would not hire me to manage their library from Minneapolis. I got to believe that virtually every other library on the planet would have the ability to do this. It blows my mind that these people thought this was a good idea. So, by the way, Helton, whose annual salary was $183,855, hired in 2020 after heading the Los Angeles Public Library System's branch locations. He returned to Los Angeles under the county's policy permitting employers to work from home remotely. Okay, come on. This is just stupid. you're not going to get quality work from a person necessarily when it comes to a library system, it's not like the whole thing's online. There are brick and mortar libraries. That's where the people go. The libraries are here. That is where that is the library. It's not going to work to have someone sit there and say, well, I'm going to have someone do like Arrested Development with the guy that was walking around with the camera. I don't think that would work. All right. We might get Senator Nick Frenz here, hopefully, in the next few minutes. Let's take a break early. Then we'll come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hopefully a Democrat of the Day when we return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. We are working right now. We've got him here, it sounds like. The Senate District is 19, which is down southwest of the metro area. Of course, Mankato, St. Peter, quite a few townships down there as well. Joining us right now is the DFL senator from Senate District 19, Senator Nick Frenz, kind enough to join us as Democrat of the Day, the Assistant Minority Leader in the Minnesota Senate. Senator, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad you were able to make it. I wanted to quickly just mention your family is from that region from 150 years ago.
Who told you that?
I saw it on your website. That's amazing.
That's on my dad's side. Yeah, they're all from West Mankato and goes back quite a few generations. And proud of it, too, although, you know, proud of the whole state.
Well, my family was up in the Iron Range for a long time, way back when. And, you know, that's just great. And the fact that you can go back 150 years, I think that's magnificent. You know the community. I mean, obviously, you're the kind of person you want to represent the district. You know it inside and out. Let's talk about last session. What were some of the things that you were happy with that you got done in 2021?
Well, I think the budget being passed is probably the thing that helped most Minnesotans the most different ways. We passed a $52 billion biennial budget. So, folks, that's everything from transportation to education to health care to state government and everything in between. I think of all the things we did dealing with COVID to get that done, more or less with bipartisan support, was probably the top thing that happened last year.
As you come into now, I mean, obviously it's an election year. There's already lines being drawn. You're in a Senate where the Republicans are in control. They have an agenda and they have a tendency of looking at the Democrats and saying, sit down and shut up. We'll tell you when to vote. And that sort of mentality. You're the ranking minority member on the Energy, Utilities, Finance Policy, Agriculture and Rural Development Finance Policy. You're on that committee as well. So what are you going to try to do here in this, you know, this upcoming session? What are some things you want to champion in those committees and in the Senate overall?
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that. I think, first of all, good policy is good politics. So we want to do the things that Minnesotans want. On the Energy and Utility Committee, I do enjoy serving as a ranking member. We have to work on climate change. We want to decrease carbon emissions. There's also quite a bit of money coming from the infrastructure bill out of Washington,
yes,
D.C. So we want to have matching funds for that. Some of the things I think are going to be most helpful to Minnesotans in that area include EV charging infrastructure, continuing to work to decarbonize industry and transportation, and some of the other things that we've been working on longer term, like weatherization. This is a proposal that I think the DFL will champion for making low-income homes more energy efficient. It's a great investment. It saves everybody money and decarbonizes in that the more efficient we are, the less we have to produce electricity, and that helps us reduce our overall carbon emissions. I think electric vehicles is also at a tipping point. We're talking about sales doubling over the last 2 years of electric vehicles in the country. And I'm no expert, but I can see Ford and General Motors saying that their entire fleets will be all electric by 2035. And you may have seen about 2 weeks ago, Chrysler Corporation, which is smaller, but they said their plan is now to be all electric by 2028. So, folks, this train is coming down the tracks, and I think Minnesota should position itself to be ready and delete.
Senator, you bring these things up, and I mean, you're absolutely spot on correct, 100% correct. You even have one of the energy companies coming out today, I think, was saying that they are going to try to be a substantial amount green energy here before the 2040. And so you do have this out there, but at the same time, you do run into these Republicans where they are rigid. I mean, you saw how Senator Ingebrigtsen was fighting the green, the green cars last
clean
year.
Cars.
Yeah, clean cars. He was trying his best to stop that. Even though, as you say, you can't get an electric car. They're off the lot before they're even they're displayed. They're so popular. Yet, sure. This is what they're coming back. It feels as if even though the public wants these, the consumer wants these, the Republicans are determined to prevent that from happening.
Well, a couple things. First of all, you're 100% right about the demand. Let me just add a little detail. Ford Motor Company, folks, you may know, has a Ford F-150 full-size pickup Lightning, all-electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And they originally said, we're going to build 75,000 of them. They have now received over 200,000 pre-orders, and they have stopped taking orders. That's how popular that one model is. And as we know, Tesla, the corporation, is now worth over $1 trillion. So your point is exactly right. The people of the country, the people of the planet are saying, let's switch. Part of that is electric vehicles being cheaper to maintain. So there is an economic argument. But to your point, where we've found resistance, it's that we don't want to change, and we are not convinced that climate change is as big a threat. And I'm also not a scientist, but I'm persuaded we have a major urgency, and Democrats have a duty to bring this to the people and say, here's what we're doing. And climate change is a priority of Minnesotans, too. What we have to do is our share. I hope most people agree on that. Where we get into debates with my friends across the aisle is how much of a hurry we're in. And unfortunately, the evidence is quickly supporting the Democrat position, which is that we don't have a lot of time.
Your district is dynamic. And it's actually kind of fun because you have a metropolitan area. I like Mankato. I've been down to Mankato a bunch of times in the last few years because my kids keep doing like honor bands and stuff down in Mankato. And so I've been down there a few times. You've got a metropolitan core building there up to St. Peter in that area. You also have a strong ag connection, a lot of great townships down there. So when it comes to bringing things back home, bringing the bacon home to District 19, what are you looking at as far as this upcoming session? What do you want to bring home for your constituents?
Well, first of all, I am proud of our district in that it has rural, some suburban North Mankato where I live is kind of like Richfield or Bloomington, and urban, Mankato's somewhere between growing and booming. So it's a good point. And by the way, let me know next time you're down there. I'd love to hear some music. What we're trying to do is the basics of a regional center. We have to support the university in town. That's Minnesota State Mankato. They have bonding projects. They have faculty and students that want support, not just pay, but tuition help, which I think the state should do. When we have a quality of life that comes from a certain commitment to diversity that I think has served us very well in being a welcoming community. I think the next 20 years, Minnesota communities are going to have to decide, are people welcome here or not? And just as an example, the Mankato Diversity Council, which serves the region, it has meetings with over 200 people. If you create an environment where communities of color are welcome, not only will you draw that community, but you'll also draw the people who want to live in a welcoming community. And I think you look at the growth in student population at Minnesota State University, and you can see the fruits of that labor. I also want to, build agribusiness, which has been a mainstay of the economy in southern Minnesota for about 150 years. And we have corn and soybean production down there. Mankato is the number one soybean processing city in the country, I believe. And I think we want to continue to support and respect those families for who that's their small business. And I think we can do all that and be a leader.
And how do the margins for the farmers today are so tight. How can we improve that scenario?
Well, that one's a great one because we have bipartisan agreement on drought relief for one thing. So farmers that were hit by drought in the short term, they should receive the $15 million that I think both parties agreed to. As far as the margins, we want to do value-added things. I'm a proponent of biofuels like ethanol and biodiesel. There are estimates that say our ethanol programs not only clean the air, that's a good thing, I hope, but adds 50 to 100 cents per bushel for the price of corn, so that supports it. We also want to continue to support agriculture with innovation. So we just were working on a bill today to support soybean innovation, you know, trying to come up with the next generation of good ideas. And Americans have always been great innovators, and farmers are very thrifty. And the combination of the two, I think, will keep ag strong in our district and across the Midwest for a long time.
For everyone out there listening right now, Senator Frentz is going to have a target on him, and a big one, too. The Republicans want 19. They are going to be very, very hard on the senator, and we need to get him back in St. Paul. I want everyone out there, help your local Democrat. DFLers, by all means, help him out. But take a few bucks. Make a donation to Senator Frentz. Also, this summer, if you want to go, Mankato is cute. It's nice. St. Peter is absolutely adorable. Go on down there. Do some door knocking. Help out with the campaign and have a nice little weekend visit down there. If people would like to get in touch with you for your campaign, for what, either a donation or to volunteer, Senator, what's the website?
Well, there's a Friends for Senate website that we use to try to, you know, marshal support. And I appreciate that very much. That's gracious of you. We welcome any help for the DFL or for my campaign, but also we see the Mankato area as a regional center on the political side, too. We have a lot of districts around us with a little bit less DFL representation. Of course, the governor's from West Mankato. That's just coincidence, I swear. And their campaign will be down there. And so, you know, we're looking to bring the basic message. Democrats are for working men and women and for equality, racial equality, gender equality, and equality of opportunity. And if you're interested in that and you're in the area, please feel free to give us a call.
That's Frentz, F-R-E-N-T-Z, F-O-R, Senate.com. I'll link to everything on social media a little bit later on. Senator, by all means, you have a wonderful session. If you ever need to come back, by all means, please do, okay?
Anytime, you let me know. And meanwhile, I hope everybody out there is safe and happy, has a great Valentine's Day, and stay tuned.
Senator Nick Frentz, Democrat of the day, Senate District 19. Thank you very much, Senator. I do appreciate that. Brett,
thank you.
You bet. Brett, we do have to do the AM 950 Wordle. Our winner today is going to be Kurt. Kurt, who actually put this in up on the Facebook live stream. Sequester, S-Q-R, sequester, great word. Squirt, squire, square, squirrel. Did you have any other ones besides that one?
I can't quite look at the sheet right now.
Okay, all right. No problem. Kurt, congratulations. Don't worry. AM 950 Wordle, we're playing it again tomorrow. Have a good one. Native Roots Radio up next. Until tomorrow, see ya.